Welcome to the next in our series of mini shiurim on the book of Yehoshua. We are learning in the merit of the chayalim, the soldiers of the IDF, as well as the emergency services, the hostages, and the injured. The topic we're going to have for this morning is an introduction to Paragimel, to chapter 3. The Jews are about to cross the Yarden, and we need to talk about the ethnic cleansing allegation, the argument that the Jews come in and they fight this genocidal war against the seven Canaanite nations. It's an important issue. It's a sensitive issue. Nothing I say, first of all, should be taken in any way, shape, or form as a comment regarding the current war on Hamas. That's number one. Number two, I'm trying to squeeze a lot into a 10 to 15 minute mini shiur, and the result can end up being that certain things get short shrift. I'd like to do this properly, and I'd like to be able to get it into one single recording, so we'll see what happens. Okay, so the fundamental problem when we deal with this issue is actually not about Torah versus modern values. That's often the way that people look at it. But it's not. It's Torah versus Torah, meaning that there is a mandate to go to war against the Canaanim. We're going to see a key pasuk from it in a little bit. On the other hand, the Torah is filled with mandates for us to be merciful. A classic example, a Gemara in Yevamos building off of Shmuel Bey's chapter 21. The story in Shmuel Bey's chapter 21 involves a group called the Givonim. We will actually encounter the Givonim, God willing, in chapter 9 of Yehoshua. They are a subpopulation that lives among the Jewish people. There's some discussion about whether they're allowed to become Jewish, convert to Judaism, marry Jews, which, again, we'll have to talk about. But in this passage in Shmuel Beis, what it seems that they are not actually of the Jewish people. And they allege that Shaul caused the death of members of this Givoni nation, this Givoni tribe. That's a long story. It goes back to the destruction of Nov, which is in Shmuel Aleph. But also, not the topic for right now. They allege that Shaul has caused the death of Givonim, and they demand, after Shaul has already passed away, they demand that David turn over to them members of Shaul's household to execute. David cannot pay them off. He can't satisfy them in any other way. They want to kill members of Shaul's family. And at that point, as the Gemara explains, David declares, wow, these people could never be Jewish. They could never be Jewish. And he says there are three signs of a Jew: Rachmanim, Baishanim, and Gomlei Chasadim. We are merciful, we are bashful, and we are generous. It's a Gemara in Yevamos, Ayin Tesamet Aleph 79a. And he says, if you don't have those three traits, you're not a Jew. Now, keep in mind, he's talking about this to people who say, Shaul killed our family. And yet he expects them to be compassionate. He expects them to be merciful. I think that's a lot. I think that's a major statement. This continues, this theme continues, when you look at the conduct of our avos, when you look at Abraham, when you look at Yaakov. Abraham, Hashem says to Abraham in Bereishis, Perek Tezvav, Pasuk Aleph, chapter 15, sentence 1, Hashem says to Avram, Al tira Avram, do not fear Avraham. What was he afraid of? Rashi says he was worried because he went to war to save his brother-in-law Lot, and there were people he had to kill in order to be able to do that. It was a war against four united kings. And Rashi says he's worried that maybe what he did was wrong when he killed those people to save Lot. That's the kind of sensitivity we're talking about. We move on to Yaakov. This is a classic. This is well known. The Torah says that when Esav comes to attack Yaakov, Esav has 400 men. Yaakov believes that Esav is going to fight a war against him. Vayira Yaakov me'od vayetzer lo. Bereishis, chapter 32, sentence 8. Yaakov is afraid. He's very afraid, and he's pained, says the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, Ayin Vav Beis. Vayira, he's afraid lest he kill somebody else. That's his first concern. And then Vayetzer lo, he's also worried lest he be killed. We know, of course, that Yaakov condemns the revenge of Shimon and Levi against Shechem after the rape of Dinah. It's unclear from the text itself exactly what Yaakov's main point was. Was his concern that he might be attacked? Was his concern their conduct? Or Shimshon Rafal Hirsch makes it very clear that Yaakov is upset about their conduct. And he says, had Shimon and Levi killed Shechem and Hamor, the perpetrators of this, then Yaakov doesn't criticize them. But because they also killed unarmed people who are at their mercy, and they went further and they looted the community, that's where Yaakov turns on them and he says, no, this is wrong. This is not the way we conduct ourselves. Move further along in Tanakh to the story of Purim. The Jews are going to be wiped out by their attackers. The tables are turned. The Jews now have the opportunity to attack them back. What do they do? First of all, they say, we don't want to attack anybody. Just get rid of the decree against us. That's all we ask for. Then they're told, well, we can't do that. So then they say, okay, then we have to defend ourselves. However, the mandate that's given by Mordechai and Esther and what the Jews actually do is only to kill the people who attacked them. Achashverosh, with his decree, empowers them, says it explicitly, chapter 8, sentence 11, they can kill women, they can kill children, they can take spoils, and they don't. They only attack their oyavim, the people who had attacked them, chapter 9, sentences 5 to 10. The text reiterates, they don't take any spoils. This is supposed to be the conduct of a Jew. Ramban makes this point in his comments to the Sefer HaMitzvos, Mitzvahs Asei Hei, added Mitzvahs Asei Hei, that he believes that the Ramban missed. He says there is a mitzvah of leaving a side empty when you attack a city. He says, Kishanatzor al irli lehaniach achas min haruchos b'li matzor. When we lay siege to a city, we have to leave one of the directions without a siege. Why? Shem yirtzu livrach yilem derech lanus misham, so that if they want to flee, they'll have a way to get out. Kibazen nilmod lehisnaheg bechemla. That way we will learn to conduct ourselves with mercy, afilu im oyvenu be'ez hamalchama, even with our enemies during a time of war. Then he goes on to note a practical benefit, which is if they have a way out, then they're more likely to flee instead of fighting you. Point being, we have a mandate of mercy. Even for animals, we have obligations. Tzar balei chayim, you're not allowed to be cruel to animals in any way, shape, or form. Or Shimshon Rafal Hirsch in Horeb, Tuf Tes Vav Tuf Tes Zayin, 415, 416, has a long discussion about this issue. So all of this seems to say that we are required to be merciful people. We are required to be merciful upon our enemies. How much more so upon people who are not our enemies? But then you open up Sefer Devarim, and you open up to chapter 7, and this is one passage, but there are other passages you could bring as well. But it says there, Hashem is bringing you into this land, and you've got all of these Canaanite tribes that are there, Chiti, Girgashi, Amori, Canaani, Prizi, Chivi, Yavusi, seven nations. Unisanam Hashem Elokecha lefanecha, God is going to put them before you, Vihiki sam, and you will strike them. Hacharim tacharim osam, you shall entirely destroy them. Lo sichros lahem baris, do not make any covenant with them. Velo sichonem, do not show them any favor. And it goes on to say, don't marry among them, they'll lead you into idolatry, and so on. So now the question is clear, right? We have this great mandate of being merciful, being compassionate, even for our enemies, even during war, when you're telling me, oh, by the way, wipe them all out, right? There's a separate issue, which is Amalek, but that's really its own shear and doesn't really fit into this conversation. So what do we do here? How do we understand this? This should bother us. This shouldn't be a no-brainer. This shouldn't be something that we just say, okay, well, the Torah says to do it. Clearly, this is right. This is, you know, this should be problematic for us. However, when we take a deeper look at what's going on in the Torah here, in our mandate to go to war with Canaan, in Yehoshua, we get a different picture of this. I could see we're already at 9 minutes, so it's not going to all fit into one recording. Sorry. The first point is Talmud Yerushalmi Shvius, Perek Vav, the beginning of Perek Vav, tells us the following. Shalosh pristinios shalach Yoshua la'eretz Yisrael ad shal yikansu la'aretz. Yoshua sent three messages into Israel before we ever crossed the Yarden, before we entered the land. First, Mishu rotze li'ipanos yipane. Anybody wants to leave? Go for it. We're not going to stop you. Go ahead. Lahashlim, you want to make peace with us? Good, let's make peace. Lasos mechama, but if you want to fight us, yaseh. Then, fine, we're prepared to go to war. These are messengers Yoshua sends. Unclear. Does he send this on his own initiative, or is he told to do it? We do know the Torah says that when you go to war with a city, v'karasa eleh l'shalom, you first have to sue for peace. And the Rambam says this applies even in a melchemes mitzvah, even in a war that's fulfilling a divine command. So maybe that's why he's doing this. But the point is, Yoshua does not seek war with them. Yoshua makes the offer to them that we can make peace. This is consistent with a comment of Rav Kook in his Arod HaMilchama. Rav Kook says, we were never supposed to go to war with Canaan. What was supposed to happen with Canaan was that we would come into the land and be role models for following Hashem, and we would inspire them that they should want to accept the seven Noahide laws, not to kill, not to steal, not to commit sexual immorality, not to worship idols. That's what is supposed to be part of the culture that we bring in. And they say, oh, wow, that's an inspired, enlightened society. We want to be like them. So what went wrong? So Rav Kook says it's the egel, it's the golden calf. Listen to his words. This is Arod HaMilchama Dalad. Lulei chet ha'egel hayu ha'umos yoshvos eretz Yisrael mashlimos im Yisrael umodos lahem. If not for the sin of the golden calf, the nations living in Israel would have made peace with Israel and acknowledged them. They would have been reconciled with us. Kishem Hashem anikra lehem hayam ma'or bahen yiras haromimus. The name of God that is called upon us, the Jewish people, would have caused in them awe of Hashem's greatness. There would have been no war. There's no need for war. And the influence, meaning the divine influence, would have come about with peace like in the days of Mashiach. That is what was supposed to happen. It wasn't supposed to be a war to the death with the Canaanim. And he's actually, you know, pinning it on us. Now, mind you, this is still not going to fit into a modern concept of morality, because the choices that we're offering them are not go about your merry way and we can all get along and you do your thing and I do my thing, you be you. That's not what's being offered. Peace includes an acceptance of these basic Noahide laws. You can't get around that. That's fundamental. Nonetheless, the major point here is, and the thing to understand is, this wasn't supposed to be about war and killing. It was supposed to be about sharing with them an important ideology that we were supposed to inspire them to accept. Now, this requires that we also take a closer look at Canaanite society, what it is that the Jews are actually coming into at this point. We talked about this a little bit in the beginning of the series when they introduced Sefer Yoshua, as well as looking at several halachos in the Rambam that relate to this and a couple of passages of Gemara. So God willing, that will happen in the next installment.